Hey guys, welcome back to the Spates What a Lad Dance in France preview show. It is the last round of pool games and there has some huge matchups. Knockout footy has come a week early for some teams, so a huge round to look forward to. We're going to do it a little bit differently this week. We've got Jake the Snake Atkins, the man from the Northern Hemisphere who's providing so much valuable insight. He's going to do the review, and then we've got our man Surly from Surly Talk Sport who's going to come on and do the preview, because after last week's tips, Jake the Snake is now banned from tipping previewing, but he is a guru at his analysis. So I'm looking forward to his review of round one, because we all know he tipped out Italy to beat the All Blacks and lost by 96 points. So terrible tipping from you, Snake. What do you make of that one? Let's start there.
Oh, but I'm not having this, boys. I can get up the receipt to the record. I said it was not going to be a serious matchup because Italy's defence was not good enough. Also, my pick of Japan over you boys against Samoa has slipped under the radar with that Italy result as well. So I've got myself 2-0 up against you boys. But yeah, I think Surly was so unimpressed with my chat about Italy that he's decided he won't speak to me this week. So we've had to split the record in half. Or he could still be hungover, actually. But yeah, let's crack on with that New Zealand-Italy game. Like, oh, jeez, boys, this was a tough one. This was a tough one. I watched this in a bar in Italy. and like, fair play to them. Like, the fans in the bar still got up and celebrated that last try. And I was watching it with my Welsh and South African teammates. And when they started celebrating that last try, we were saying, like, geez, if this was back home, the game would have been off at half time and everyone would have just been sinking piss. So, look, fair play from the Italian fans. But on the field, yeah, I don't really know if I've got the vocabulary to articulate how much of a fucking hiding that was, lads. Like, I pulled some numbers up because I think it's easier just to look at it in raw numbers. Like, New Zealand, 806 carry meters, 33 defenders beaten, so that's 33 missed tackles, 20 line breaks, 14 tries.
20 line breaks is massive, eh? Like, that is an absolute clinic. Some teams go through a game without a line break.
Yeah, I've watched England do that for the last 2 years, bro. 20 line breaks, and like, it's been a long, long time since Italy had a hiding like this. We're looking at like 20 years since Italy had a proper, proper old school hiding like this. And I just think they were unfortunate that they sleepwalked into this game against an All Blacks team where this performance has probably been building in the background quietly for a long time. You think the South Africa result coming into the World Cup and then the France result round one, combined with all the sort of media talk of like, oh, the boys are a bit under, you know, writing them off in the tournament. We spoke last week about maybe training getting real heated up this week in the camp. Mm. It's probably a performance that's been bubbling, like brewing up for a long time. And then they just absolutely unloaded on an Italian team that was half asleep in the first half, weren't they?
Yeah. Mate, it was an incredible performance. It's one of those ones, like, there's not many teams who can beat up a side like that. Like, when the All Blacks have front football, there's clearly no better side than them, because they can score tries like not many other teams can. I guess the real test is when they are put under pressure, how they're going to be able to adapt, and that's going to be the big one when they come up against Ireland or Scotland or South Africa in this quarterfinal. I guess they get a lot of confidence from it, but I'm not sure if it's solved many problems about when they can't get front foot ball, how they're going to be able to react. But, man, if teams let them get quick ball and play a high tempo speed, the boys can just play. They play the footy and score some unbelievable tries. That game was pretty to watch, especially if you had some fantasy rugby players out there.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we've spoken a lot about like France being maybe the best team coming into the tournament and Ireland being the best coached and most organised team. But like, unquestionably, New Zealand are the most ruthless and accurate team, like in terms of executing their opportunities. If they get given a picture for space, 9 times out of 10, they absolutely nail it off. And I think that's why we see them so often. Like, I've written down about one of the later games. Like, I think the difference between the top sides and the sort of mid-tier sides is that the top sides are fucking putting the minnows to the sword. And Italy turned up and played like a minnow side, and New Zealand put 100 on them. And that is where New Zealand are like excellent, best team in the world, is they are just fucking ruthless. If you give them crap pitches in defence, they just ruthlessly keep taking them all day. I thought Geordie coming back into that side, man, geez, that back line looks different with him in the middle, mate. I think I was sitting here watching, I actually said to the lads I was watching it with, like, he must be the most all-round, in terms of complete player, the most all-rounded footballer in the world. Like, I can't think of another guy who could start for a top 1, 2, 3 side in the world, every position in the back line, and do a genuine, like, test match quality job. He's such an impressive player, man.
I agree. And I think I think it was Surly who spoke about him in the preview. But, yeah, him coming back, mate, you could see the difference. His cross kick early on in the game to set up the first try. And just has all the skill set. And, looking forward to him getting one more game under his belt before the big one for them to sort of build some more combinations. But very impressive game. Does it change your opinion on the quarterfinal, or where does that sit for you?
I think it just makes it a tastier matchup. I think, look, realistically, like you said, in terms of their preparation, it probably wasn't the ideal hit out they'd have wanted. Like, it's great for the lads to get confidence and, like we said, get some meters in the legs and score a load of tries, but it doesn't necessarily harden them up the same way that if we think they're going to get Ireland, the same way that Ireland have been hardened up. Especially Ireland this week, looking at the matchup they're coming off, you know, they're basically coming off a mini quarterfinal now. So I wonder if it, you know, if it affects their preparation that way. But I would say if there's one team that doesn't need like a tough run in before they can just turn up and execute, it is the All Blacks. And I think, like for me, and I think a lot of people in Europe as well, it really slipped under the radar that Geordie had sort of moved into midfield and locked that place down himself in the last 12 months. And obviously he didn't play against France. And I think now he comes in, that back line does look different. The balance, like it's obviously it's one player coming in, and you know, he's replacing another world-class player. But the whole balance of the back line looks better for me now. So look, Ireland are still favourites, but it certainly makes the matchup, if it needed to be more exciting, it makes the matchup more exciting now. I think it's closer to a coin toss than it was before, that's for sure.
Yeah, man, it is going to be some quarterfinal. Cannot wait. Oh, man. But we've obviously got a few more games to get through from the weekend. You spoke about it, Japan versus Samoa. You did tip out Japan in this one. Me and Surly both went Samoa. Man, I was disappointed with Samoa. I thought they were going to fire a few more shots than they did. But Japan, on the other hand, looked sharper. I thought this was their best game they played all competition, and it sets up a pretty juicy matchup this weekend as well. So where did you see this game?
No, for sure. I really enjoyed watching this game, man. I think it was Japan back, I'm not going to say to their best, but closer towards their best, you know, that kind of like ball handling, high possession between the 22s in midfield, that like intricate interplay down the 15 channels that we've like come to love to watch from Japan. And I think that the main thing from Japan that excited me was how much of a positive step this was from the England game. Like the way they managed this game against Samoa was so much better. You know, the first 10-15 minutes, they exited well. They were happy to kick the ball to a really fired up Samoa team and sort of let them shoot their shot and just get through and survive that first 15 minutes of Samoan heat. And then they started to, as the Samoan boys started to get tied into the game, Japan started to expand, play higher possession, keep ball alive more. And they had a really, really nice period through the middle of the game where they looked close to what we've come to expect from them at the last few World Cups, where they were really, really impressive to watch at times. I don't think that the red card should sort of like undermine Japan's win. I know it got close at the end, but I actually think Japan were really dominating the game pre-red card. And then after the red card, I actually think they fell off a little bit, which sometimes happens for teams, doesn't it? It just galvanizes the other lads. But for Samoa, like, geez, their discipline is absolutely shocking, man. Like, another two cards in this game. And then not just this game, throughout the tournament in general, like, at this level against any tier 2 or tier 1 side, like, you cannot be giving away that many cards.
I think I'm noticing more cards from the minnow type sides. I feel like their technique isn't quite as good. Maybe it's the lack of rugby they've played coming into the World Cup, but all the teams who are playing less rugby going into these games seem to be giving away a lot more cards for these high shots. Maybe they're not used to it. Maybe they're just not as focused on it because they've got more to focus on, but it's costing them dearly in some of these games.
Absolutely, man. I think that there's two things that stick out to me like that seem to be consistent trends for when the red cards are. One is like fatigue. Like when players get tired and they get lazy, sometimes they revert to that kind of like old, like what we do in training, which is like a square shot on the ball. But when you're trying to belt somebody and you end up hitting them above the ball and taking their head off, it's almost that like heavy legs, they don't want to dip into the tackle. And then the other thing is like the emotional control, like you said, with the minnow teams, like obviously some of them are getting so pumped up for these games. They lack that kind of like calm ruthlessness. Obviously they do. They lack that kind of like calm ruthlessness we expect of like Ireland, where they're just like dead cool, dead calm, clinical. And that kind of lack of emotional control and fatigue often, I think, is what results in these plays. Like no players are trying to take someone's head off. It is just a sort of a brain fart, isn't it?
Yeah, no, 100% agree with all of that. But the next game was Argentina versus Chile. Did you get anything out of this one? 59-5 to Argentina, but
yeah, I watched this game. I think we've mentioned the sort of lack of depth affecting the minnow teams a lot on the pod so far over the last few weeks in terms of like how it affects them in game, like getting to 50-60 minutes in the second half and then watching the bigger sides run away with it because of the quality we see off the bench. I think this weekend was the first time we've seen the minnow teams getting stung for their lack of depth, like in terms of the wider structure of the World Cup. Yeah. You know, you think like they're fronting up games, big test match games week after week now. They're just not used to doing that. And they obviously can't rotate for games like the tier one sides can. And I just think like looking at this Chile game, against Argentina, like it was so obviously lads with just emotional and physical fatigue, like slipping off tackles, like making poor decisions, easy shove over mauls for Argentina. And yeah, I just think it's that combination of like lack of depth. And then, you know, like a lot of these guys aren't in full-time professional environments. Like every single player is in the tier one teams, you know. Every single player in that Argentina team is used to fronting up tough game, tough game, tough game in a full professional training environment week on week. And they've done that for years and years. And I just think it looked now like Chile is starting to, and some of the other minnow teams we saw in this round as well, just starting to maybe have exceeded their limits in terms of freshness. Like this is a long tournament and the boys just look fucked at times.
Yeah, no, they're just can't quite compete against those teams. They did hang in there a wee bit in this one, but obviously Argentina ran away with it. But the next game was one that we spoke about as potentially being a banana skin, and with about 20 to go, it looked like it might have been heading that way. It was Fiji versus Georgia, 17-12, even right up to the last minute, chasing that last kick from the Georgian fullback or whoever it was. This game went right down to the wire. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I wish I'd had the balls to pull the trigger on calling this a banana skin game. I moused out of it and now I'm really regretting it because it would have been a hell of a pick. Look, I mean, the short of it is it's great to see Georgia turn up at this tournament. Like, yeah. I've been sort of harping on about them last couple of weeks on the pod because I was really hoping coming into the tournament that we were going to see like a 2019-2015 style Japan turn up from them. Especially looking at their group, I was like, there is a couple of matchups there where they could nick a game or two and potentially upset someone's standings for the quarterfinals, and it just hasn't happened for them. And look, great performance, too little, too late. But Fiji, I think, are now in sort of new territory for them, aren't they? Where it's like the pressure of expectation, like we see them as a genuine, serious team now, and that comes with a whole nother load of baggage. You can't necessarily be as emotionally free when you know that there's genuine results on the line. Yeah, Georgia did a good job to keep them out, but 60-65 minutes and then Fiji do what Fiji do, don't they? I mean, that the second try with Bottia. Like, Georgia can defend as well as they want. You can't stop them doing that. And we know that Fiji have like two or three moments of world-class razzle in them, and they're going to put these sides away. And I think it will be the same for Portugal this week.
Yeah, that's all it was in that game. A couple of moments of Fijian magic and end up being too good for Georgia. But there were some concerns from that game to think about that quarterfinal matchup with England. England will be sort of licking their lips around the way they struggled when they were put under pressure. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup for sure. But I do think Fiji will be far too good this week going forward against Portugal. But the next one was Scotland, who were far too good for Romania, 84-0. Darcy Graham, what an absolute lad he is on the wing. Four tries, unbelievable stats, highest fantasy score of the year so far. So well done to anyone who played him or captained him or even triple captained him. But what do you make of the game? Obviously, I don't know many of those Scottish second stringers, but geez, Ake, some of them can play.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned it just a second ago, talking about New Zealand. Like, one of the big differences at this tournament between the top sides and the mid-table sides is the top sides fucking put the minnow teams to the sword, even when they rotate to their second string team. You know, obviously Scotland scored heaps and heaps of tries, loads of line breaks, but they also shut them out to 0 points, which it takes some doing in a test match. No matter, you know, I don't care who you play against, to nil anyone in a test match is seriously impressive. And Scotland have shown that they are now, they should be considered in that higher bracket of international teams. You know, like we just said, they rotated and they still are ruthless enough to put these smaller sides away. But you know, I find myself saying this every week when we talk about Scotland. Like, they are just so lucky, unlucky on the draws. Like, if they're in two of the other groups, I think they potentially qualify top seed.
Yeah, I agree.
And go into a really favourable quarterfinal, and then you're looking at them like, okay, favourable quarterfinal. They probably walk into a semi-final, and when it's semi-final time, you know, anyone can beat any one of those top four or five teams. So I feel so bad for them in terms of the scheduling situation that they. It just seems so unfair that they have to try and go and get a result now against Ireland.
Well, if anyone can beat anyone in those top four or five teams, well, then this is the weekend to show it. I guess this is their final for them. This is a huge opportunity. I know they're confident in their camp. It does set up a very, very juicy matchup for a pool play, especially last round of the pool, with so many different ways of teams progressing. Heard all sorts of ways that South Africa can be out, or Ireland could be out, or Scotland could be out. Like, obviously, they're working overtime and the points differential and all those sort of different options. But the end of the day, if Scotland win, this is going to be a huge game for them.
Yeah, absolutely huge. And like, geez, Razio Rasmus's Twitter has been absolutely fantastic this week, man. I don't know if you filmed it, but geez, that guy is so funny, man. Like, I totally understand why he frustrates people. He frustrates me at times, but if you were a player in his squad, man, I think you'd find him so funny.
Yeah.
Like, just laying into people on Twitter, tweeting all the potential scenarios. I have to keep checking it's his real page and not like a parody page. Oh, jeez, no, he's good. He's good. But yeah, that Scotland-Ireland game this week, man, jeez, I think it's going to be very, very tasty. It is, for me, it's a pre-quarterfinal. Like, it is a quarterfinal matchup in the pool play this week.
Yeah, 100%. And looking forward to it. Okay, next one, Australia versus Portugal. Australia by 20. I think I tipped that right on the button. I just don't think Australia are that good. Portugal are okay, and that game basically went how I expected it to.
Yeah, Jim, hell of a pick from you, man. Like, I mean, before we sat down to start recording for this World Cup, if we'd been sat in a situation where you're saying Australia by 20 against Portugal, who I'd never seen play code before,
yeah,
like I wouldn't have even been able to grasp a situation. And to mate, it should have been less. It should have been less difference. Portugal dropped the ball over the line from a shove over.
Yeah.
So you know, and they slapped their goals over. So it could have been 13. Mate, I like we just said about Scotland, the difference between the top sides and the not top sides is the top sides are putting the minnows to the sword, absolutely crucifying them, and Australia aren't a top side at the moment. It's the harsh reality of it. Like, I flicked through some of the stats after the game, just flagged up Portugal, right? More possession, more territory, more meters made, more defenders beaten, more offloads, more gain line success, better scrum percentage, better lineup percentage. That's almost every key metric for Portugal.
Yeah.
That is absolutely crazy that we're sat here saying Portugal have won, you know, every single sort of KPI of rugby performance to Australia. I mean, positive twist for Australia, they lost all those key metrics and still got the result.
Yeah.
But
they're genuinely becoming almost a tier two nation, aren't they, in terms of the quality of rugby they play?
Yeah, and it was like it was tough to watch at times, man. Like even some of their scores was just drive your way down the field through kicking and sort of like penalty infringements from Portugal, get into the 22 and then just legit smash over against the smaller side. Portugal, on the other hand, man, like some of their structures and their attack stuff is really, really nice, man. The first score that they put over against Australia in the 22, man, was such great shape. Yeah. Such great shape. Attacking in that 22 zone is sort of like the most difficult place to run good attack shape, isn't it? Because you've got 15 defenders in the front line and the defense is super aggressive because they can't give up any space. So almost all the time when you get into that zone, teams can't keep to run good shape. But they were patient. They kept the backs loaded the whole time. Patient. Saw the picture, pulled the trigger and executed brilliant shape. And then three-man cutout ball to go over untouched on goal line attack is... That's what gets me going for goal line attack. I absolutely love to see it. And from a minnow team to be that well organised and that clutch, like I have been really, really impressed with the attack shape they've run this tournament, man. They've been the exciting side for me coming out of the minnows, I think.
Yeah, they've been the surprise package for me. Obviously, like you, I had never seen Portugal play. If you told me before the World Cup or before they entered the World Cup, I wouldn't even know they had an international side. But what they've done at this Rugby World Cup, I think they can be really proud of. They've played well, played exciting footy every week, and even pushed sides like Australia to, you know, relatively close margins. So Portugal, I think they can leave this Rugby World Cup, despite what happens this week, with their heads held high, and they've got a few new fans from all around the world, no doubt. But the last game was South Africa versus Tonga, and this was a game which I thought deserved to be closer on the scoreboard than it was. I thought Tonga really put South Africa under pressure pretty early in this game, and then South Africa just managed to squeeze a few points from a few loose sort of tries, unusual tries, one off the... Was it off the head or the shoulder again?
Yeah, the head pass again. They learned that from England, bud.
Mate, that pass needs to probably come into some team's face shape. I didn't realise you could throw it at someone's shoulder because that seems like you could move that to give yourself a benefit of it, the doubt. But you obviously can, and they scored off it. And I think that was a bit of a momentum swing because Tonga had them under all sorts of pressure close to the line. Mm. The prop got actually penalised for holding someone in, which you don't usually see. Usually the ref will just say, don't do that, play the ball. But he got penalised, and then they went downfield, got that try, and that was a big turning point. But South Africa, when they work their forwards around the corner and get physical, they're a tough side, and they ended up just having too much power and impact off the bench to just run away with that one.
Yeah, I think you've absolutely nailed it there, Jim. I've got very, very similar stuff. I think... We mentioned from South Africa that in terms of last week when we did the review, we spoke about their attack just looking a bit aimless, I think is a kind way to say it at times when they don't win those first two collisions. And like Tonga for the majority of this game just fronted up for those collisions. Mm. And they do just look at times when they get stuck between the 15s and they're not winning collisions, like they run out of ideas. There's almost no... sort of like plan B or like thinking of moving a team around or changing shape and changing their structure to sort of ask questions of a defense or challenge folds or find attacking kicks. You know, the sort of classic things that you want to see from a world-class side when they don't win collisions. I think they are so used to winning collisions that the back line has almost got lured into this false sense of security that they can almost like spark up a cigarette, let them go to work and then flop over the line.
Yeah.
Positives from this, man. I think this was a huge step forward from Tonga from the week before. Maybe I was a little bit harsh on them when I listened back to the review from last week's pod, but this was a really, really good step forward for them. The only thing I added other than that, Jim, was the South African goal kicking looked good.
Yeah.
I think they went 100% off the tee, if I got that right.
Yeah, Pollard kicked all his, and then Labott came on, and I think he kicked two or three, but...
Yeah, I think he kicked two and one from the touchline, and that, I think that for me just reinforces what I mentioned last week about, like, this being a psychological thing for Labock, yeah, in terms of the pressure and rushing his process. Like, the guy can obviously strike a clean ball. I mean, he's got one of the best skill sets in world rugby. Obviously, he can hit a steel ball. We saw him hit a cross kick without looking at it the other day. he's just obviously under a huge amount of pressure. Mm. He probably feels under the pump as well now, Pollard's back in the squad, because he knows that people will be calling. Pollard obviously got the job done for them in 2019. Like we've said, South Africa, not just sort of tactically for their rugby team, but like culturally, it's so important for them to have a kicker who kicks their goals. It's just such an important part of their identity as a fan base as well as a team. I think it does just show the psychological effect of like getting in your own way when you goal kick. So it'll be interesting to see now what they do. They obviously have a difficult decision to make for quarterfinal time, whether they back Labock. I think Razzie will. He tends to go with his guys who've had the jersey leading into big games. He tends to back his boys to come up big, and I hope he does, because I want South Africa to keep pushing this attack forward. Yeah. Again, we mentioned last week, like, this is such a good back line. This is such a good back line, and like we said, could be the best back three in the world. I think Labock is one of the best ball players at the line. I just think they're cruising through games at the moment and letting the forwards dictate the game and sort of letting the game pass them by almost. I mean, what do you think? Do you think they'll go with Pollard?
I think they will go with Pollard. Like I spoke about last week, I just think he suits their style, the way they want to play better. Man, he strikes a ball clean off the tee. I just feel like that's the style they want to play, and if they're going to play that way, he is the man. But I'd also love to see LeBlanc there, because it would mean they're looking to play a little bit more, use their back line like we've said, and it's interesting. That's an interesting dynamic for them, but I think especially if they're going to look for this 7-1 split again, then surely Pollard's your man, because you're looking to play a very forward-dominated style of rugby. But that is going to be a matchup as well in that quarterfinal if nothing happens too outrageous in the Scotland game. But France, South Africa, wowee, these quarterfinals are just next level. But, mate, that wraps up the review. Incredible insight from you, and I've got to say a special shout out to Mint for providing these undie vouchers for six winners last week. Six people picked Will Jordan to score in the sixth minute of that game versus Italy. So I initially only had two vouchers per week, but shout out to Mint for still providing six vouchers to all of the winners. I also had a spam account try and get credit card details off some of you guys off the Facebook entry, so apologies for that. And I even copped a fair amount of abuse from a lot of people saying that I am a scammer, but I just want to let you know that this is not a scam. It's just a friendly giveaway who someone's tried to get on the back of. So I won't be doing any more comps through the Facebook page. It'll all come through the Instagram page going forward. So if you do want to join the competition this week and win yourself a Mint Undie voucher, then head over to the Waterlad Instagram page and stay tuned. And I'll just give everyone an update on my fantasy rugby team. Obviously had a pretty average round last week up until the masterstroke of playing and captaining Darcy Graham. Huge turnaround for me. He got a massive score, highest fantasy score of the comp so far, which meant I did end up going up a few places to 10th in the Waterlad League. Some huge scores all around. Some people triple captained him, but it was a good week to have Darcy Graham in your side. My Fijians let me down. I got a couple of cards. Rajradra let me down with just only a handful of points, and Tui Sova as well, a late card cost him. But it just goes to show your matchups are important. Even if you think a team is going to win, you need the team to really win to load up some points. So obviously the All Blacks scored a lot more points than I was expecting. So if you had some All Blacks in your side, then you would have been happy days. But that Scottish backline was where all the points were in that 84-0 victory. So getting as many of those backs in your side is really important, which looking forward to this week, I think it's a pretty obvious week for fantasy, real clear games on who you need to stack your team with, obvious captain choices as well. So your three All Blacks, I think, this weekend are going to be key. Your outside backs, I'm looking at Damien McKenzie, who's a fantasy wizard playing at fullback. I've gone Will Jordan, tossing up between those two as captain. And my last one is probably going to be Lester Fanganuku. So I'm looking at the few outsides. They're the guys who seem to be racking up the most points, and I want to make the most of a big score here against Uruguay. I think you also go three French, three Tongans, three Fijians in your squad, and then you take your pick on those last three. So that's how I'm going to balance my squad. I'll wait for the teams to be named before I choose who those players are going to be, but the likes of Pinot and stuff stand out against the Italians. So huge week for me, fantasy rugby. Hopefully climb up into that top five or three for the Wadelaide League and see where we end up. So that is the review part of the show done. Obviously, this is where we say goodbye to our good friend Jake the Snake, but that means we also welcome in Surly from Surly Talk Sport. We've managed to track him down. He started the Wadelaide jingle throughout that whole second half against in that All Black game in the weekend. But good to have you on the show for the important part of the show, the preview, the tipping part. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, I thought I'd show up for the business end and just try steal the show. Like you mentioned, I tried to get the jingle going. We had a couple false starts. I thought I heard someone humming it, so I went again for a third go, but it wasn't quite the impact that I wanted. There were a lot of French fans dressed up in All Blacks kit, so it fooled me into thinking that I was surrounded by fellow Kiwis. So let's put it down to that, you know, not quite as familiar with the track maybe.
Yeah, I thought I heard it for a moment there, but it sounded like it was in a different language, and then I ended up noticing it was in sort of the tune of the French national anthem as well, so it wasn't quite it, but it was pretty close.
Yeah, I actually emailed in to try get the lyrics up on the big screen, because obviously it's quite a tricky song to master, but they obviously missed that memo too. I did notice, though, they kept putting up, in French, conversion means transition, so it kept coming up, transition Richie Mwanga, and I was expecting him to come out as a whole new bloke every time it came up on the screen, so something to keep an eye on there as well.
Yeah, I'll be watching that one closely. But what was the atmosphere like? You're obviously at the game. What a game to be at, mate. You need to get to all the All Black games. What a difference you make.
Yeah, obviously, the boys knew I was there in attendance, and I asked for a cricket score, and they delivered it. Four short of raising the bat, but the atmosphere was unreal. Like, the passion that the French fans have, I think I mentioned it after that opening game, but like, it's All Blacks versus Italy. 20 minutes in, the national anthem just sparks up out of nowhere, the French anthem, and they've got like tears in their eyes just belting it out. And yeah, given they've had a fair few, but it's just so cool to see. And then the Italian fans were so into it as well, and despite them getting smoked, they were still well and truly into it. And then you had the Kiwis doing what Kiwis do best, and that's just try start Mexican waves left, right and centre. That's how we have our presence. And a couple of them went around the full time, a few rotations, so there were some blokes that were fizz. You know, they looked like they were from, you know, your Hamilton, Invercargill type of operators, and they were just stoked to be there, you could tell. But no, it was a great crowd, mate.
Right, sounds awesome. And obviously, there's going to be another good one this weekend when New Zealand take on Uruguay. If they can put on 96 against Italy, it's hard to see this one being much less. Where are you seeing this game going?
It's going to be interesting, right? Obviously, there's quite a few changes here. I think only six lads are starting from that game against Italy. So Ian Foster's taken a slightly different approach to what a lot of people might have thought. I do think it's a fine line, right, between building towards the quarterfinal and also resting a couple guys that have probably played more minutes than expected coming in. I think that loss against France kind of forced our hand to play a really strong side against Namibia for at least a portion of that game. And as a result, we're seeing them rest this week. But I'm not sure if we'll clock 96. I think that's a pretty tough task. Like, I was just blown away by that All Blacks performance. I'm sure you and Snakey have talked about it already, but I was thinking 40 points. And then It was more than that at half time. So I'm thinking around, 60 plus would be a good result here. It's more around like the style that we play and guys that are on the fringe looking to push for a spot in the 23, like your Leicesters and co, if they can do enough here to convince Foster that they need to be in that lineup next weekend for me. But what's your thoughts on this game? Because it's one of those ones, if you win by 40 or 50, but you don't play well, everyone gets nervous again.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'm not sure about the selection decision either. It doesn't really make... For me, I'd be expecting them to try and get the best combinations going into this final as possible, potentially trying one or two things that they think could make a little bit of a difference. But I was surprised to see so many changes. Like, to rest some of these guys, they've played like 80 minutes over 4 weeks. Feels like there's no real need to rest them. I guess the threat of an injury, but that's just footy. And I feel like we've got enough depth to be able to replace basically anyone. So, interesting. I'm not too sure. I do think it's going to be a massive score. I do feel like the All Blacks, when they get quick ball, they're just an incredibly hard team to face, and they've got so much X factor across the park. D-Mac at fullback excites me. I think he's going to have a massive day. I've just spoken about him in my fantasy team. Will Jordan, I feel like it's going to be a huge day at the office for these types of guys. Richie Mwanga, he's had a relatively quiet Rugby World Cup so far. I'm expecting him to put on a Richie Mo show, which we know he can do. Double time lad, Searle medal winner. He's got the reputation that when he comes to the big games, and this is mainly building into next week, he is going to be stepping up. But I'm looking forward to him giving us a little teaser of what he can do at this Rugby World Cup. And I do think it's going to be 80 plus. I just can't rear. The scores seem to go up pretty quick when you're watching the game. Even that 96, it felt like they did that relatively easy. Just never really had rough patches. But, I think it's going to be a huge score again. Uruguay aren't quite the side Italy are. And, I'm expecting another big, big score.
No, it was interesting to hear Ian Foster, though, speak. I don't know if you heard it today, but he mentioned D-Mac starting and then he's going to move into 10. And Bodie will come on into 15, which I found kind of interesting because, like, Bodie's 100% a fullback now in their eyes, right? I thought they might have kept Damien there, Bodie at 10, or maybe even move Will to the back. But it's so clear now that Bodie's stuck in that 15 jersey. He could be a great option off the bench at 10, but clearly they've ruled that out. So it's interesting to get the insight into that as well. So like you mentioned, I think Damien's in for a huge day on fantasy. I've got him for two or more tries on my bet slips as well. So I think he could run a mark, eh?
Yeah, well, that is great insight from you to make sure that Damien McKenzie is the choice over Richie Mwanga at 10 this weekend for fantasy players, because you're getting that extra game time, and when that move does happen, he's a fantasy wizard anyway. His game, a lot of his game is fantasy points. Has a lot of fantasy points in it, so getting that insight from you, he's moving to 10, Bodie to fullback, points galore for him. So that could even be a good captain option for a lot of people out there. Good insight from you into the Fozzie press conferences. Well done, you got to one. Okay, next game, France v Italy. Now, France beat New Zealand, so New Zealand, France are going to beat Italy by 120, or what did they beat us by? How do you see this game going?
Yeah, unfortunately that math didn't work out for that Wallabies game last week, did it? But yeah, this is an interesting one, and great to see the Italians kind of saying they targeted this game instead of the All Blacks game after all that banter. They reckon they're up for the upset this week. But to be honest, mate, like, no one's talking about this game here this week. They're all talking about your Ireland versus Scotland and those type of matchups. So I think this one's kind of flying under the radar a bit. And the only time you hear about the French team on national news is just daily DuPont updates, which is fair enough too, I guess, because they've got this game in the bag, don't they? I expect Italy to be a bit better. Like, they'll be so disappointed at that performance. They really built it up. The coach asked them to go the big lift to try and get them that one win against this old Kiwi side. But yeah, I expect them to be better, but I do think France by 60 to 80 points. I don't think it'll be that 96, but I still think it's going to be incredibly one-sided. I just want to see Italy start well. Like, I thought they'd at least do that last week. I thought the first 20 minutes, that just come out full of passion. Like you saw them in the anthem, they were giving it the big ones. To then just drop away like that was so disappointing. So hopefully they can start well, but the Battle of the Anthems, that's worth the price of admission alone. Like whoever wins that could go a long way to winning the game, mate.
Mate, 80 points is still a huge score. So
yeah,
I do think, I think this is either going to go one or two ways. I think Italy will keep it relatively close. Like, they've obviously been a huge improver in the Six Nations. Snakey's talked them up this whole preview show. Everyone says they're a serious side now. Obviously, in the weekend was the biggest loss they've ever had in about 20 years. Like, they're a better side than that. I think everyone knows that. So it's either going to be a competitive game where they really turn up and stay in the fight for a long time, or they've just lost so much confidence from that loss in the weekend that Pinot and the likes run an absolute muck in this game. And I'm expecting maybe the second, a little bit like you, I could see this going 60 to 80 pretty easy. And France just show everyone that they are still potentially the team to beat. Next game, Wales versus Georgia. So Georgia came off a good result against Fiji, played a lot better, pushed them all the way. Can they beat Wales? I think this game's going to be a lot closer than everyone's predicting. I think Georgia might be able to push Wales a little bit here.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think what Georgia bet them last time they played, or recently anyway. So it's an interesting matchup because Georgia's strengths also help nullify Wales. Like, they play a kind of similar game where the four packs just go at it, right? So I think Georgia will really be up for this one. And they got that confidence from last week. They were disappointed that they couldn't pull it off, but they really pushed Fiji. And me and Snakey were messaging through the night. No doubt your missus was wondering what was going on WhatsApp, mate. She probably thought you were up to no good. But
sleep,
yeah, we were bantering
mode.
About
thank God for sleep, yeah. Mode.
Smart man. Yeah, we were bantering about how we said it could be a banana skin. We didn't think it would be, but it looked like it was going to be again. So it's hard to know what you're going to get with Georgia again. They're another of these sides that fuel so high on emotion, but I think it'll be a win for Wales and it'll be a 13-plus win, but on the lower side of that, like, I'm thinking, yeah, 20, 25 points. Good to see Dan Biggers set to come back for them next week, he reckons, and Anscombe, he's so good anyway, he'll pull the strings. There's been a few changes, though, so, yeah, I'm expecting a 20 to 25-point win, but I see some people saying Wales will waltz through. I don't think Wales are potentially as strong as the Wallabies made them look. So I think Georgia will push them more than Aussie did almost.
Yeah, I think that's the trap a lot of people have fallen into in that pool, thinking that if you beat the Wallabies, you're a good side. But I think we've shown in this World Cup that that's not the case. And I genuinely think this is a game which could be an upset. I do think Georgia could push Wales, and I don't know what that would do to the pool, but it would make it definitely interesting. But I am predicting Wales to win, but just by a small margin. But don't be surprised if the Georgians get up for this one and change a few results going into this quarterfinal matchup. And the next game is England versus Samoa. So Samoa been very disappointing this whole World Cup, really. But this is a chance for them to go out with a bang and stir a few feathers, but what do you make? Do you think they're a chance to beat England?
I think Samoa are most dangerous when they have nothing to lose, right? Like, obviously, I think I've been saying every week I've been disappointed with them just because on paper they're such a strong side. But I think with nothing to lose, this is where Samoa could do their best work. I'd love to see them beat England. Now that Snakey's not on this call, I can say that I'm not enjoying watching England play footy at all, unless Marcus Smith is in the football side, and I don't think he will be starting this week anyway. I think they'll go back to old mate, boring old George Ford, but I'd love to see Samoa get the win. Hopefully Sapuanga's found his kicking tee and he's back in the mixer, because that'll be a massive part of them getting the result. But it would be great for them to finish on a high, because I feel like if they get dusted 13 plus here, it would seem like a massive semi-like failure, disappointing World Cup for them. They would have wanted to have beaten Japan. They probably had hopes of pushing Argentina and beating them as well. So they're a bit of better football side, I think, than their results have suggested so far. So I'll be well and truly backing Samoa with my heart. My head says England will win. They'll go up in threes and make it a bit more of a boring clash, but I'm hopeful. And if England prove me wrong, then well done to them as well, because I'd like to see them play some good code as well.
Now, I'm looking forward to that game. I think it's going to be an entertaining one nonetheless. And, hopefully Samoa can show us what they can do in this competition. But I, like you, am expecting England to be too strong at set piece and just control this game, turn it into a bit of a strangle fest and win by roughly 15 would be my prediction. But the next game, the game of the round, one of the games of the pool, knockout footy. We've spoken about it already, but quarterfinals come early pretty much with Ireland v Scotland. First best team in the world against the fifth best team in the world, probably. Who are you picking? Can Scotland do it? Can they cause an upset?
Well, they certainly can. I don't know if they will, but like, this to me has been the perfect game to finish on. Like, as a fan, this is what you want from your Rugby World Cup game. I think this one and the Japan-Argentina, like, you want pool results to not be guaranteed heading in. And this is the perfect matchup. There's been banter flying all week between these two sides. They obviously know each other really well. There's even been media asking if Scotland and Ireland are going to rig it so that South Africa don't go through, which is elite level match fixing. You'd expect that in some rogue cricket league, but I rate the question anyway, and it certainly got people talking. But it's good to see Finn Russell in the media saying he'll be up for a bit of biff if it goes that way as well. That's my boy. That's what you love to hear from Finn. But I think on the day, Scotland could do it. I think they haven't beaten them in the last eight games since 2017 or something, but they've always been pretty close, so it hasn't been like crazy margins. I think the last time they lost was in that 1-7 margin. So I'd love to see Scotland do it, just because I'm a big fan of the way they play, but I'm also a big fan of the way Ireland play, and I think they just problem solve too easily that they'll get the job done. So I'm backing Ireland, but I think it'll be like under 10 points, maybe by 6, let's say, and I think they'll just be too classy towards the back end of the game, but Scotland have the weapons to do it.
Yeah, man, it'll throw the competition right open if Scotland do win this game by the points they need to go through, and either Ireland or South Africa gone out of nowhere. Geez, it would really shock the competition. But yeah, I can't quite see it happening either. I, like you, I rate Ireland far too highly. And yeah, I do feel for Scotland, but they've showed us how good they are throughout this World Cup. It's been awesome to see them smash the minnow teams and just really show the world what a quality footy team they are. And hopefully they put in a really good performance just to show everyone that even though they're potentially out in pool play, they're still potentially the fifth best side or fourth best side in the world. So, yeah.
Just quickly on that, as an All Blacks fan, are you almost hoping Ireland win just so they don't come into that game next week off the back of a loss? Like, they could be even more deadly then. Would we rather catch them, 17, 18 wins on the trot? And like, obviously it's a knockout game, but maybe a tiny bit of complacency?
Do we play them if they win?
I would say so. Scotland have to beat them by 21 and not get a bonus point. Yeah.
Oh, hell, that would throw it right open. Yeah, not sure. I think I'd rather them win then and just knock them when we need them to.
Yeah,
but the next game is Japan v Argentina. Do you see an upset in this one?
Yeah, an upset in terms of I don't even know who's going to win anyway, so it's hard to know. But like,
Argentina are short favourites.
Are they? That's interesting because Japan last week really impressed me. I'd been off them, but I thought they were good against Samoa, and it's another type of matchup again where they come in heavy underdogs and they could pull this off. I don't think Argentina are the team they used to be, but at the same time, if they click, then I think they'll account for Japan. So it's hard to know what to expect going into this one. I think Argentina by 10 to 15 points, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Japan get them by 3 and it's a complete boil over and they go through. I'm just excited to see like two sides that play so differently with so much on the line. They can both be extremely passionate and emotional, just go at it. And I'd love to see Argentina hit the heights of what they have in the past, because I think if they can get through, then a semi-final isn't unrealistic for them just because of the side of the draw they're on. So it's pretty crazy to think, right? But who have you got in this one?
Yeah, I think Argentina. I thought that early, like when we went through those predictions the week before to come up with our final quarter-finalists. But like you, Japan impressed me in the weekend. I didn't expect them to beat Samoa like they did. And then obviously this weekend, I haven't been impressed with Argentina. But if that Japan side turns up that did in the weekend, then they're going to really test this Argentina side and put them under a fair bit of pressure. So I could see this game also going either way, but I am leaning towards Argentina. I do think they just have a few more standout players to get them across the line, but that's going to be another cracking matchup. I'm looking forward to watching that one. Okay, two more. We got Tonga versus Romania. Do Tonga just put away Romania like everyone else has in this?
Yeah, I think so. I thought Tonga were really good last week. I'm sure you've already spoken about it, but that was their best performance so far. That was the kind of Tonga we wanted to see throughout the tournament. So I think they're just hitting their straps late, and I expect them to be well and truly too good. Hopefully in like that 30-plus margin. It'll be cool to see them in the tournament on such a high and just show everyone that with more games, they could be a real force. But how about yourself?
Yeah, I'm seeing it the same. I think this is going to be quite a big score, so I am going to try and get three Tongans in my fantasy rugby side because I do think they'll be too good for Romania. I think there's a big gap between those two sides. And yeah, we spoke about Tonga versus South Africa. I thought they were really good, competitive. Their physical side, and I think when they get some front football, we'll see a bit more from the likes of Piatau and some of their dangerous backs who have been shut down a fair bit throughout this World Cup, haven't been able to show the full range of skills that they have. But in this game, I think we'll see that, and I think Tonga will be able to leave this Rugby World Cup feeling pretty confident that they've done a good job against Romania. Well, that's where I'm seeing it anyway. And when I say things like that, they're usually right, as you know.
Oy.
Okay, last game is Fiji versus Portugal. Now, this is going to be a good one as well. I think Fiji obviously struggled in the weekend with Georgia, but I think Portugal should be a more suitable game for them, really. Both teams like to play a lot looser style of footy, which should suit the Fijians, and I think they're going to put on quite a big score on this one and go into that quarterfinal with a bit of confidence. How are you seeing it?
Yeah, I'm expecting a 13-plus win. Obviously, they just need the 1 point to get through, so a win will be enough. And it'll be interesting to see like how early they rotate the bench if they've got the result won, because for me, it's that starting 15 for Fiji that can win them a quarterfinal game. Their bench probably isn't as strong as the other nations, so protecting those stars at all costs will be huge. But yeah, I just think they'll be too big and powerful through the midfield, and their offload game is just going to kill them, plus their breakdown work continues to be unreal. It was great to see their assistant coach, I think it was, saying to Eddie Jones that they'll use his credit card to buy some kava to celebrate the win this week. I'm sure Eddie's got plenty on the credit card because we all know the bank balance probably isn't struggling like the side is, but it's some good banter from the Fijians, and I'm just fizzed that, like, I just really want them to get the job done just so that it's confirmed they're in, because what a result, man. And then they can look ahead to like an England or something like that where they've got nothing to lose, but everyone apart from English fans will be behind them, which will make for such a cool atmosphere. That's almost like the quarterfinal game you're looking forward to the most behind that All Blacks Ireland game, and it's just for complete passion reasons, right?
Yeah. Mate, it is going to be an unbelievable game. And I can't see them not getting 1 point, so I'm sure Fiji will go through. But I did read that Tuasova, his son died before that Georgian game. So incredibly sad news there. The fact that he's decided to stay there in the Rugby World Cup is quite hard to believe, really. I've obviously got a son who's 7 years old, and mate, the thought of losing a son and having to go out there and play footy is incredibly tough, but he obviously did it. It's what his country means to him, and this World Cup is that important. So pretty crazy stuff, pretty powerful, but condolences to the Tuasova family, because, man, that is incredibly sad news.
Yeah, 100%. And yet, like you mentioned, the fact he's staying on is pretty crazy, because something like that can be completely life-changing. So hopefully at least the Fijians can put in a big performance this weekend and on they march, because there'll be nothing better than seeing them get the win. But yeah, that was just heartbreaking to read. You almost have tears in the eyes reading the story, let alone going through that yourself. So how he managed to get through that game alone is just crazy.
Yeah, get up the Fijians to at least, yeah, to make that sacrifice all worth it. I'd love to see them go as far as they can, even to a final. Or imagine if they won the thing. It would be absolutely incredible. But
imagine All Blacks versus Fiji. Like, I'd actually be quite nervous for the first time ever to play Fiji. Like, that's how good they're going.
Yeah, mate, it would be good stuff. But that does wrap up this round, and obviously next weekend is where it's all starting to ramp up that whole lot more. So really looking forward to next week leading into this, the finals footy is going to be next level. So hope you enjoy the footy, mate, and look forward to catching up to you next week when you're back on New Zealand shores.
Yeah, sounds good, mate. And hopefully Snakey did quite well in the review, because, geez, he had a pretty tough week, didn't he?
Tipping Italy, yeah, we've spoken about it. He's had a shocker.
You love it. Clip that up for sure. Make the man pay, eh? Make him pay up the Southern Hemisphere.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening. And if you've got this far, I'm guessing you enjoyed the episode. So if you did, please give it a share if you can. And also cheers to our mates at Spates for sponsoring this episode.